It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the races for governor and U.S. Senate in Wisconsin are taking shape. We'll go through the candidates, the issues, and the party dynamics in this year's election. First, we're looking at state and national voting policy news as the 2022 midterms approach. The Wisconsin Elections Commission says that state Republicans have made the largest ever request for voter data, so large it will be effectively impossible to complete. Wisconsin Republicans are also pushing against the use of ballot drop boxes. Three lawsuits are underway, as well as a push for rule changes from the state legislature. On the national scale, President Biden is pushing to get his two voting bills passed, though the filibuster will likely have to be overturned in order for that to happen, which today looks unlikely. We're talking about the latest news on voting in Wisconsin and around the country, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the tensions between Republican lawmakers here in the state and the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission? Do you think there needs to be a large-scale review of voter data before the fall election, as Republicans have requested? How about ballot drop boxes, a big particular issue lately? Should they be allowed? What should the rules be if so, or do you not like them? Do you want to see federal laws changed, which looks, again, not that likely as the way things currently look at the Senate anyhow? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Kathleen Dolan is a distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathleen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Lots of news out there related to voting laws. Let's zoom in on Wisconsin first, Kathleen, and these ballot drop boxes in particular. As I mentioned, three lawsuits, movement in the state legislature trying to clarify rules. What are your thoughts on the rise of ballot drop boxes this year and the role they play?
Well, ballot drop boxes are a tool that some localities around the country had used even before the 2020 election, but they became much more popular and much more important during the global pandemic. And if you remember, in November of 2020, that was before we had a vaccine. So we were in a place in the pandemic where people were told to distance, not to gather. And so in-person voting became less attractive to people. And so ballot drop boxes were a safe and convenient way for people to vote. Because of former President Trump's very unfortunate attempts to politicize and raise questions about the ways in which people cast their ballots, ballot boxes have now become a sort of political question and a political issue. And really what I should say is they've become a partisan question because Republicans here in Wisconsin and all around the country have tried to raise questions about their use, and have, many states have passed laws to either ban their use or to severely limit their use. And it is one more really unfortunate consequence of the way in which, not just for whom we vote, but literally how we vote, the mechanisms by which we vote have become partisan in a way they have never been before.
Looking more generally at the elections here in Wisconsin, we had this Legislative Audit Bureau report looking at the 2020 election, suggesting a bunch of changes, many of them to clarify things like ballot boxes and how witness signatures are confirmed on absentee ballots. And then we have the Gableman investigation looking into claims of wrongdoing in the election. Do you see a need for some kind of clarifications for changes in election law without necessarily diving into some of the partisan issues you were just outlining?
So, Rob, I think the first thing that we should remember and that your listeners should know if they're not familiar is that the vast majority of officials who have responsibility for elections in the United States are local elections officials. The federal government has relatively broad guidelines. States and localities are the ones who administer elections. And so here in Wisconsin, like in every other place, local elected officials have a lot of sort of leeway about how they administer their elections. And so what the Audit Bureau's report suggested is that there might be circumstances where there could be clarification of language about, who makes the decisions or under what conditions. Some of the criticisms of their use, has been to move in a direction where the state legislature would like to have rules or laws either banning them or severely limiting them. And that would deny to local administrators of elections their control. Republicans are usually about local control. And this is sort of yet another example of Republicans in the state wanting to control things at the state level when they don't like the way local officials have done them. So again, I think the problem here is the very partisan nature of this, right? The Gableman investigation continues despite the fact that there is zero evidence of any concern or any legitimate argument about the election here in Wisconsin. And all of these attempts are either trying to obfuscate or to put, you know, some veneer of credibility on what is a baseless claim.
On a related note, we've heard from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. It's a group of three Democrats, three Republicans, saying that a group of state Republican lawmakers requested large amounts of voter data. The head of the Wisconsin Election Commission said it's the largest request for data she's ever seen, would likely be impossible to complete, includes maybe some confidential voter information that they can't release. Is this just fitting into that pattern you were just talking about?
Yes, it is. I think this. So one thing about this request is that it is, you know, largely disingenuous. It is not terribly likely that these state legislators believe that having these data will help them in some way make improvements to our election system. Instead, this is an attempt to try to paralyze the Election Commission, as you say, with a request for data that they couldn't possibly ever meet because it's just so overwhelming and large. And I think it's telling that the request does not come with clear discussions of how those data would be used, because it isn't a substantive data request. This is simply one other way to try to paralyze the Election Commission, whether it's through direct lawsuits or requests for information like this.
Talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at possible changes in elections and election laws here in Wisconsin and around the country. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you would like to see in Wisconsin? Do you think it should be easy to vote absentee here in the state? Should local governments, local election officials have the ability to use drop boxes? Are there particular rules you'd like to see surrounding the use of those drop boxes at the national level? A couple of pieces of legislation stalled right now in the Senate. President Biden making a push for them. Looks like a change that would be needed. Getting rid of the filibuster on these issues, not likely to happen. Should it? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Let's look at what's happening on the national scene, starting with a listen to President Biden speaking in Atlanta earlier this week.
To protect our democracy, I support changing the Senate rules, whichever way they need to be changed to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights.
Kathleen, that seems like a tall order. Now, one of the senators who'd have to agree to do that, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, said today, she says she supports voting changes, not getting rid of the filibuster to pass them, though. So without changing the filibuster, is anything likely to happen here?
No, honestly, it's not. As you said, if Senator Sinema is not on board with the rest of the Democrats, then it would require a Republican to work with the Democrats to change the rules of the chamber, which is pretty unlikely. And it is the case that the two bills that are in front of the Senate are both, in different ways, but are both important to making sure that all eligible Americans have access to the polls and to vote. And again, I would suggest to our listeners that when we give so much administration of elections to state and local governments, one of the things we end up having is the reality that people's abilities to vote and the circumstances under which they can vote differ simply based on where they live. So we've had 19 states already in 2021, since the 2020 election, we've had 19 states pass a myriad of laws that restrict and limit and sort of make more difficult for people the exercise of the right to vote. There are other states that have expanded the right to vote and expanded opportunities for voter registration and ballot access. And so we are becoming a nation, right, in which people who live in certain states have an easier time voting, and we have millions of people who live in states where it is much more difficult. And I think one of the things that President Biden was trying to articulate the other day was that those sorts of things shouldn't happen, that there should be basic national standards for the ways in which elections are administered, and you know, to make sure that everybody has at least the same level of access to voting.
And the Freedom to Vote Act, one of the two pieces of legislation stalled in the Senate, would set a lot of those standards you're talking about when it comes to how absentee voting laws work and lots of other stuff. But then there's that local control thing. Traditionally, as you were saying earlier, state and local governments take the lead on this, and there's a lot of resistance, hesitation to hand that kind of power to the federal government. Is there really a case to overcome that local control in this situation?
Well, you can have both. I think it's overly simplistic to suggest it's one or the other. You know, at this point right now, the federal government lays standards for voting, right? You cannot abridge voting based on age or sex or race. There are broad outlines that the federal government makes, and then states and localities administer elections with those guidelines. If we were to add some administrative rules, whether it's, you know, a consistent method of voter registration or a consistent method of absentee voting, then localities would be able to administer their elections in line with those standards. So, I mean, I guess what one thing, you know, as I always have my students think about, and we can ask our listeners, you know, do we want a world in which it is, you know, almost automatic to register to vote in some states, and in other states, people have access to voter registration offices 3 hours a day, 2 days a week, and nothing online. So, you know, again, the experience, if I am somebody with the legal right to vote, should government be able to make it that hard for me, whether it's to register or to vote? And are we all entitled to some basic and baseline protections of our access to the ballot? And so localities will always administer elections, but is it that much to ask that they do it within some basic national standards?
Talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at some of the latest voting news in Wisconsin and at the federal level. You can join in at 800-642-1234. In Washington, do you think Democrats should overturn the filibuster in order to get things done on two different voting laws, or should the filibuster rule remain in place? Do you agree with Democrats' proposed voting legislation? How about here in Wisconsin? Should drop boxes be available as an option for local election officials? How easy should it be to vote absentee? And you heard Kathleen's question. Should we have the same kind of voting laws, whether you live in Wisconsin or Wyoming or Washington? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with UW-Milwaukee political scientist Kathleen Dolan about voting, with debates over voting laws here in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Aura is with us in Evansville. Aura, hi.
Hi. I think this whole voting rights thing is utter insanity. These legislatures passing these draconian rules to keep people from voting. I just don't understand how this can even be happening when it's a fundamental right of an American citizen to vote. And furthermore, that electoral college, you know, that makes people's votes not even count sometimes. So I think it should be a popular vote, and I think it should be administrated by the federal government.
Aura, thanks for the call. Kathleen, Aura worried, she says, about restricting votes and not wild about the electoral college either.
Yes, you know, the Electoral College mechanism for electing a president is something that we generally have conversations about every 4 years, if only because people ask why we still use it. But in the last, you know, 22 years, the Electoral College has become more present in our thinking, right? We've had two circumstances where the person who did not win the popular vote won the Electoral College vote and became president, George W. Bush in 2000 and Donald Trump in 2016. And so we ask questions all the time about whether a mechanism that was added to the Constitution in 1791 is really still the right mechanism for a country this large. And this diverse. So Aura's question is hers and a position shared by many others.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Steve in Friendship. Steve, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering, how is it, can we vote some of these Republicans out of office for wasting taxpayers' money? Is there, because some of these constituents are just representing their party and not the people who they represent.
Steve, thanks for the call. And Kathleen, I think for some people that'll raise another. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you know, Steve raises an important point on which we haven't touched yet, which is the gerrymandering, mm-hmm. the severe gerrymandering of the state legislative districts here in Wisconsin. So gerrymandering, for those who may not be familiar, is the intentional drawing of the lines of legislative districts to advantage a particular political party. And here in Wisconsin, 10 years ago, after the 2010 census, the state legislature gerrymandered the districts in such a way that they hold about 67% of the legislative seats in both chambers. And that is despite the fact that they actually have received a minority of the votes of the popular votes, if you look at votes as they're cast for Democrats and Republicans statewide. So Wisconsin is one of the most severely gerrymandered states. So it is unfortunately the case that the answer to Steve's question is that there's not a lot that people who live in districts with Republican legislators, that not much they can do at this point because the sort of Republican voter to Democratic voter ratio in those districts is so lopsided. Certainly, you know, the statewide offices or governor, lieutenant governor, are places where the sort of direct popular vote can make more of a difference. But we are looking now, particularly since the state Supreme Court has said essentially that the maps they will approve will not be fundamentally different from the ones we're using now. This Republican advantage is baked in for another 10 years at least.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Mike next in Sun Prairie. Mike, hello.
Hello. I have a quick question. I keep hearing in the news that it's these voting laws are being passed or disenfranchising certain groups of people, but they never really explain how. I don't understand. I mean, pretty much you have to have an ID to do anything in this world anymore. I'm hoping somebody can explain why it's disenfranchising a certain amount of people.
Thanks for the call, Mike. So voter ID and other laws, Kathleen, how do they disenfranchise if they do, say, minority voters?
Sure. So Mike raises voter ID, which is, you know, interestingly, was very controversial probably 5 to 10 years ago and actually has become sort of less visible as we focused on other things. Voter ID laws allow states to define for themselves what kind of ID is acceptable. In most states, that is often a driver's license, a military ID, a passport, something like that. The evidence suggests to us that there are ways in which it disenfranchises the elderly, the handicapped, the disabled, and minority voters, because those are people who are less likely to have a driver's license or a passport. And so states have to have mechanisms by which they can make IDs available to people so that they can vote. But that is not the easiest thing, right? I mean, having a driver's license from the time you're 16 is a lot easier than when you're 80 and you have given up your driver's license and now you have to get some other form of identification. So that speaks just very briefly to voter ID. But what I would like to address is Mike's broader question that people don't often explain how these different mechanisms can advantage or disadvantage certain groups. Voter ID, we have a lot of evidence of the impact. What I think is interesting as the use of drop boxes and early voting and other mechanisms of convenience for voters, how after the 2020 election, those have become very partisan. And by that, I mean that former President Trump saying that early voting is sketchy and drop boxes should be illegal. all of that Republican opposition to these tools that make it easier for people to vote, they have adopted a belief that those mechanisms to make things easier advantage Democrats somehow, and they have done it with absolutely zero evidence. And so the interesting thing is, if we think about an early voting period or a local drop box that makes it convenient, how is that not also convenient for Republican voters? How does that not help people in rural communities? How does that not help people who might be elderly or infirm and don't leave the house very often? November is often a bad weather time in many states, right? So if we let people vote by mail, if we let them vote a month early, there is no evidence in political science that mechanisms of convenience help or hurt one political party. And so one of the things that Republicans are running the risk of doing is starting this battle against convenient voting mechanisms without any evidence of whether it will actually help or hurt them. And so they have dangerously politicized voting without any clear understanding of the underlying issues.
Thanks for that call. And Kathleen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Kathleen Dolan is Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. She talked to us today about national voting proposals, possible changes in the works here in Wisconsin, and other voting news. Keep following voting stories here in Wisconsin over at WPR.org. We talked about redistricting and gerrymandering a bit. You can find the WPR Reports podcast mapped out while you're there. Coming up after the news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, we check in on the re-election bids for both Governor Tony Evers and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson in Wisconsin's 2022 midterms. Want to hear from you, especially the kind of issues you want to hear candidates talking about in both of those key statewide races. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we answer a why Wisconsin question about the history of the Wisconsin Dells and find out how it came to be known as the water park capital of the world. Now, this year's race for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin is underway with Republican Ron Johnson officially seeking re-election against a group of Democratic challengers. While Democratic Governor Tony Evers' re-election bid could soon heat up with a few more Republican opponents considering getting into the mix. We're checking in on the latest developments in Wisconsin's midterm elections on the ballot this fall, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you surprised Senator Ron Johnson decided to run for a third term? Are you glad he is, or do you think it's time for a change? What do you think about the pool of Democrats running against him? How about the race for governor? What are you looking for there? And in either or both races, what issues do you want to hear the candidates talking about? What do they need to say or do to earn your vote? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or is the D or R in front of their name enough for you? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Craig Gilbert is a political writer and Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to Central Time.
It's nice to be with you.
Well, on Sunday, Ron Johnson formally announced that he will seek re-election for a third term. He'd made a pledge in 2016 to only go for two. He addressed why he decided to run again during an interview this week with WISN in Milwaukee. Here's a listen.
I have been for the last 11 years, and this reason I ran in 2010, I was concerned about the direction of our country. And I think we all thought, that in 2016, when we finally had a president and we had the House and the Senate, we could turn the ship state around and, we would put it on the right course for a long period of time. I don't think any of us anticipated Democrats completely taking control of government.
All right, Craig, a big announcement, an important announcement in this race. Was anybody really surprised that he said he was going for it?
No. Nor do I think it was shocking that Democrats took control of the government in 2020, as if that was never going to be a real possibility. I mean, this happens all the time in politics. power shifts. That's what happened in 2020. And none of us, I think, in the political world are very surprised that Ron Johnson is going to seek a third term, even though he did say he would only serve two terms.
Is that something voters worry about if you're going to support a Republican for Senate? Are you going to go back and say, yeah, but you said only two, man?
You know, probably not a lot of voters, just because we are pretty polarized and people, you know, tend to line up for their side. And the universe of voters whose votes are actually in play is not huge to begin with. And then within that pool of voters, the number of people that for whom this is going to be the deciding issue is probably small.
You recently wrote a piece, Craig, saying that Senator Johnson is maybe one of the most vulnerable incumbent senators in the country. His popularity is low, and he's probably a favorite to win anyway. Why is that?
Well, to say he's one of the most vulnerable incumbents in the Senate is not a big statement, because there just aren't that many vulnerable incumbents. One reason is that, you know, we live in a world where blue states elect Democratic senators, red states elect Republican senators, and then the short list of purple states elect senators from both parties. He's, you know, one of very few senators, Republican senators, from a state that Joe Biden carried in 2020. And he's going to be the only Republican senator on the ballot in 2022 in a state that voted Democratic for president in 2020. So, you know, kind of by definition, he's in sort of a vulnerable zone. And then when you add into that the fact that his own polling numbers aren't great, he is objectively vulnerable, I think. But at the same time, you know, the political climate could be so favorable to him. I mean, it's always favorable to the out. I mean, it's almost always favorable to the out party in a midterm election. And, you know, you've got a Democratic president with low approval ratings. That makes it a very kind of challenging environment for Democrats. And so it's kind of hard to lose a race in this world under these conditions when you're an incumbent senator in the party that's out of power.
We've got four main candidates so far on the Democratic side of things. What are you seeing for those candidates as they try to distinguish themselves for Democrats as the best option to take on Ron Johnson?
Well, you know, there are going to be some policy differences, not big ones and not a lot of them in this race. But, you know, I think what happens in a situation like this is a lot of the internal debate going on in this race is going to be about, you know, who can beat Ron Johnson. I mean, that's the sort of motivating, thing for a lot of Democratic activists. And that's a powerful message if you can win that argument within the Democratic primary. So you're going to see all the leading Democratic candidates kind of tailor those arguments around their own particular backgrounds. And they're going to argue, you know, a person with my background has the right background to defeat Ron Johnson. They're going to argue about their own electoral track records, where they come from in the state, their ability to put together certain coalitions. So it becomes kind of a political argument, almost a horse race argument, alongside all the kind of philosophical arguments that sometimes take place in a primary.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at our big statewide races in Wisconsin in 2022, Senate and governor. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Wherever you stand, are you hopeful that your candidate has a shot at winning? Do you have an important issue on your mind this year that you'll weigh as you vote in a primary, a Republican primary, say, for governor, a Democratic primary for U.S. Senate? What do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear the media asking candidates about? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Whichever side you're on, if you're a Democrat, are you excited at the option of running against, of working against Ron Johnson? If you're a Republican, how about the chance to unseat Governor Evers? 800-642-1234 is the number. Craig, the race for governor now, flipping things around, Democratic incumbent, one main challenger on the Republican side, but thoughts that other folks might get in there. What are you seeing on the Republican side of things?
Yeah, so the decision by Senator Johnson to run for re-election kind of took the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate off the table for anybody else. And so you have some ambitious Republicans out there that want to run for statewide office. The Senate is no longer an option, so they're looking at the governor's race. There are two names that are out there are Kevin Nicholson, who lost a primary for the U.S. Senate in 2018, and Eric Hovde, who lost a U.S. Senate primary, a Republican primary in 2012. So, you know, it looks like we're going to have a contested Republican primary. That wasn't always clear that it was going to be the case. I think it's too early to know how competitive it will be and what, you know, the fault lines are going to be in a Republican primary. In this day and age, there's always sort of the potential to have a Republican primary kind of break down along, you know, along sort of pro-Trump and less pro-Trump lines. We don't know if that's going to be the case this time around, but we've certainly seen a pattern in Republican primaries in recent cycles of a candidate who dominates in the suburban Southeast around Milwaukee and a candidate who does better in the rest of the state, which are the same places where Donald Trump did well, for example, in losing the Wisconsin primary in 2016. That's become a familiar kind of geographic fault line in Republican primaries. And so one scenario is a replay of that.
And looking at it through the eyes of Governor Evers now running for re-election, we heard Ron Johnson vulnerable but still has a good shot. What is your read so far on Governor Evers?
Well, he's certainly vulnerable with respect, you know, to the political climate. His polling numbers have been a little bit better than Ron Johnson's. Not a lot better, but they were a lot better in the first 2 years of his term when he was doing really well with independents, and he wasn't doing as badly with Republican voters as Democrats typically do. I think he was boosted in the earlier phases of the pandemic. His numbers have sort of come back down and settled back down into sort of where you would expect them to be in a polarized, evenly divided state like this, where he's sort of closer to 50-50 now. He's not really underwater like Ron Johnson, but he's, you know, he's in a gray zone, but he faces real peril from the political environment. If you look at the history of campaigns for governor in Wisconsin, the last 8 races for governor have been won by the party that's not in the White House. So the party of the president has lost the last 8 races for governor. That's kind of a daunting or chilling trend, I would say, for Governor Evers. And so that's his challenge, is sort of bucking that trend. There's a lot of reasons for that trend, but they all have to do kind of with the dynamics of midterms and how they tend to favor the party out of power. Those voters are more motivated. And if the public is frustrated by conditions in the country, including the pandemic, including inflation, they tend to take it out on the president's party.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Louie is with us in Oconto. Louie, hi.
Hi. I really like the Democrats running for the seat against Ron Johnson, and especially Tom Nelson. Want to give a shout-out to him. Boy, that guy, he has a lot of energy. I believe that he's the only candidate so far that has met with people in every single county in Wisconsin. And I remember when he was starting out, walking the streets of Kaukauna, meeting the people door to door. I mean, the guy has been really up on the issues. So just wanted to say that.
Louis, thanks for the call. Craig, does that kind of old-fashioned politicking, hitting the streets in every county, is that something that you think still makes a difference?
You know, it's an open question. I've actually gone door-to-door with Tom Nelson in Kaukauna many years ago in one of his legislative races. And he does have an interesting electoral history. I mean, he's represented areas that are not particularly blue. You know, that we've seen a lot of campaigns that have emphasized kind of, you know, shoe leather, grassroots, door-to-door, personal contact. That can be effective, but by itself, it's not always effective. And so, you know, if you're not somebody who starts out with statewide name recognition, it's hard to build that name recognition without either being at the center of the news or spending a lot of money on television.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Washington Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert about re-election bids for Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Governor Evers has done enough to be re-elected? What do you think of Senator Ron Johnson's performance in the U.S. Senate? Should he get another, a third term? Call 800-642-1234. Are there other names you'd like to see in a race? Tommy Thompson? 800-642-1234. That's come up. I don't know how seriously. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us today previewing Wisconsin's races for governor and U.S. Senate. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Rose is with us now in Menominee Falls. Rose, hi.
Hi there. I just heard Craig Gilbert talk about the off-year elections, which we've all heard about, and how the party who's not in power has a greater chance of winning, et cetera. And I have to tell you, as an active volunteer campaigner for Democrats primarily, I find that, I know it's fact, but I find it very discouraging. And when I try and campaign for candidates, when you hear that over and over again, it just makes you feel like it's not worth it. So why bother? Because this is, and I get it. It's fact that all these years, you know, and most of the years that it happens that way. But the more we hear that, the harder it makes it.
Interesting. Rose, thanks for that call. Craig, trends don't vote, of course, people do. But also, Rose, worried, I think maybe it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you point out that trend and voters hear that trend, they might think, as Rose worries, why bother?
Well, I think that's sort of related to the phenomenon of, you know, you get into a campaign season and people start seeing a lot of opinion polls. And they're showing a trend. They're showing one candidate ahead and one candidate behind. And the supporters of the trailing candidate always have that fear that their own supporters are going to get discouraged by this sort of perception that, you know, that they're going to lose the campaign. I mean, one thing I would say about that is that, you know, first of all, none of this stuff is determined. Surprises and upsets happen all the time. If it were true that being perceived as the underdog were fatal to a campaign, then underdogs would never win. I mean, if you go back to 2016 in Wisconsin, you know, there was this pretty universal perception that Donald Trump was going to lose the state of Wisconsin for president. Certainly every poll suggested that, just like, you know, when Ron Johnson ran in 2010 and 2016, a lot of the polling sort of had him trailing Russ Feingold in those races. So I think we've seen that while I totally understand the concern, and by no means do I think that the coverage by the media of these races should be dominated by, you know, this kind of discussion and dominated by questions about who might win or who might not win. I think we've seen time and time again that's not deterministic, that people, you know, upsets happen, underdogs win, and, you know, historical patterns aren't ironclad. So it's really, I think, up to the candidates and the parties to kind of mobilize and motivate their supporters. If they're mobilized and motivated around the issues and around the candidates, they will come out to vote.
Thanks for that call, Rose. We'll go next to Terry in La Crosse. Terry, hi.
Hi. I would like to make a comment about Ron Johnson. I used to be a strong supporter of Ron Johnson's as a healthcare provider in the state of Wisconsin. I believed in him the first two times that he ran. And my comment about him now is that I will not vote for him. I feel that he turned his back and betrayed the healthcare providers of the state of Wisconsin. His comments about vaccinations are appalling. He has no understanding of science. He's a dangerous man. I also believe that he has been drinking Donald Trump's Kool-Aid far too long.
Terry, thanks for the call. Craig, Terry says she had voted for Senator Johnson in the past, worried his comments on the pandemic, obviously getting a lot of attention, his association with former President Trump. Do you see these as factors, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for one thing, you know, they are probably mobilizing for the, you know, kind of pro-Trump base voters in the Republican Party. You know, he could have some success mobilizing those voters as a result of, you know, being increasingly in tune with the Trump message and also things he's been saying about the pandemic. On the other hand, the risk for him is alienating some of those people in the middle, some of whom may have voted for him in the past. There is a subset of Republican voters and independent, maybe conservative independents who have had big qualms about Donald Trump. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether Ron Johnson's voting patterns look like they did when he ran last time, when he actually, you know, outperformed Donald Trump in 2016 in southeastern Wisconsin, for example, among suburban voters. This time around, the polling suggests, you know, there are some issues out there. When Marquette did a poll in October and asked people whether they trusted Ron Johnson as a source of information about coronavirus, the majority of registered voters said no. What was more interesting about that was even something like a third of Republican voters said no. Now, some of those voters, or maybe most of those voters, may end up voting for Ron Johnson anyway because they're Republicans, but it does suggest that, you know, some of his rhetoric on this issue does come at a cost for some voters.
Thanks for the call, Terry. We'll go to David now in Wisconsin Dells. David, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, David?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about Governor Evers. You know, I was pretty disappointed that when we had the rioting in Wisconsin, especially in Kenosha, the local legislature there tried to get extra help or added help from him specifically, and he denied it. And I think that was a mistake. I mean, look what happened with the Rittenhouse, all that crap. That could have been avoided. So, you know, I don't know.
I got you. Dave, we're just about out of time, but this is an issue that Republicans are raising, Craig, that the governor had sent some National Guard troops. They say not enough overall his handling of riots and protests.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting issue. I mean, it, you know, whether it'll be a front and center issue by the time the election rolls around, given the passage of time, I don't know. I mean, I will say one thing about this interesting and sort of hard to assess about the Evers situation is that because we have divided government, because he's been so limited in his ability to implement an agenda because the Republicans have a lock on the legislature, you just don't have the same record to evaluate him on, for example, that Republican and Democratic voters did with Scott Walker when he had control and he could actually leave his policy imprint on the state. So that's a little bit of an X factor in the governor's race.
David, thanks for that call. One more X factor in just half a minute, Craig. Tommy Thompson, he was asked. He didn't rule it out. I don't know that there's any serious consideration of a new Tommy Thompson bid for governor. Quick thoughts?
Formidable politician with an incredible electoral history. I will say that the way he governed and the way he ran is harder to do today than it was then.
Because
for obvious reasons, we're a much more divided and polarized and partisan state, and that really wasn't his style. It's a lot harder to do today, and it would present certain challenges even within his own party. If he did run, I don't expect him to run. I have a tremendous amount of respect for his political skills and his history, but it would be a surprise if he ran. It would be a surprise if he could win a nomination, I think.
Craig, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Absolutely.
That's Craig Gilbert, political writer and Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was with us today with a look at the 2022 races for governor and for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin. Follow our latest reporting on those races all year long, pretty much, over at WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, healthcare can be a tough job in normal times. The last couple of years have not been normal times. Find out about the mental health challenges facing providers and how they're dealing with them. That's tomorrow here on the Ideas Network. Are you trying something new in your cooking this year? Let us know. That's the subject tomorrow of this week's edition of Food Friday. We want to hear from you during the show, and you can get started right now. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Some examples. Are you planning to try something new in the oven, on the stove, on the grill? A new style of cooking or reaching out to a different food tradition from around the globe? Maybe trying a new ingredient, recipe, or cookbook? Or maybe just trying to cook more? Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Me, with kids moved out now to college, we are relearning the stuff that we used to like that the kids weren't always as excited about. Looking forward to hearing your stories tomorrow on Food Friday. This is Central Time.